Herr Frey, wir in Europa diskutieren ja seit Monaten vor allem über die Nachteile eines Freihandelsabkommens. Sie selber sind aber für das TTIP. Warum das eigentlich?
Well, basically, I think they're somewhat in favor of the transatlantic trade and investment partnership. Americans are somewhat ambivalent about the U.S. role internationally. In the recent Pew survey, some of them believe that the United States' influence in the world has gone down some over the past decade, particularly since 9/11 of 2001. But when it comes to involvement, U.S. involvement in the global economy, two-thirds of Americans say they think it's good. And when Americans think about international issues, they often will think about Europe. And the notion that there could be a better relationship between the United States and Europe, they generally think that's a step in the right direction.
Also Mr. Frey glaubt, dass die Amerikaner zum größten Teil, nämlich zu zwei Dritteln, für eine transatlantische Partnerschaft sind. Einige seien zwar ambivalent gegenüber der Rolle der USA in der Welt, andere meinen hingegen aber, dass der amerikanische Einfluss im letzten Jahrzehnt untergegangen ist, vor allem seit dem 11. September, und dass die Verbindung zu Europa besser sein könnte, was es ja jetzt auch anzukurbeln gilt. Und warum wäre ein solches Abkommen gut für die USA?
Well, I think they believe that it's going to be beneficial to both sides and that through increased trade activity, through increased investment activity, and that's direct investment. And what we mean by international direct investment is where an investor in one country basically buys a share or even the majority interest in a company in another country. And overall, they think it's positive. I mean, in the United States, we have almost 6 million Americans that work for foreign-owned enterprises. And, you know, German enterprises are very prominent among that list. And so the feeling is it can go both ways. And through the trade and investment activity, people will prosper.
Mr. Frey meint hier, dass Amerikaner glauben, dass es für beide Seiten förderlich sein könnte. Die Handelsaktivität würde ansteigen und internationale Direktinvestitionen auch. In den USA arbeiten fast 6 Millionen Menschen in ausländischen Firmen und so etwas gilt es auszuarbeiten. Davon würden eben beide Seiten profitieren. Renommierte Beobachter bezweifeln, Mr. Frey, den Wirtschaftseffekt für das Abkommen. Denn eine Studie des freihandelsfreundlichen European Center for International Political Economy, die kommt zu dem Schluss, dass die Wirtschaft maximal um 0,06% im Jahr wachsen würde. Warum ist es dann überhaupt noch sinnvoll?
Well, in essence, even though the percentage increase in GDP, gross domestic product, may be relatively modest because we have an open regime between Europe and the United States, the feeling is we're moving in the right direction. You remember, if we go back to the beginning of the 1930s, we had a fairly open regime. But then as we got into the Great Depression, we had a tremendous drop in trade activity. We actually went down by well over 20%. And as time went on, we found there would be a 20% drop in our standard of living. We don't want that to happen again. We want the movement to be forward. And again, it can be beneficial for both sides. It's what we call a win-win situation.
Earl Frey meint, dass das Wachstum gering sein mag. Vor den 1930er Jahren hatte der Handel zwischen Europa und den USA aber zum Beispiel auch geblüht. Und dann kam die große Depression und der Lebensstandard in den USA, der ist um 20% eingebrochen. Der Handel ist dabei auch tief gefallen und das will er auf jeden Fall verhindern. Und das sollen auch die USA und Europa. Und ein Freihandelsabkommen, das wäre auch eine Absicherung, eine sogenannte Win-Win-Situation für beide Seiten. Die Europäer, Mr. Frey, die haben ja Angst, dass man uns amerikanische Standards auch aufdrücken will, zum Beispiel bei der Gentechnik. Was sagen Sie dazu?
Well, I can, and you see even some of that among Americans, but their notion is they are basically in favor of some of this genetically modified activity, particularly if you look at the Green Revolution of several decades ago. That really transformed a fair amount of the world and brought a lot of people out of hunger. And their notion is if it can be scientifically proved that it is not harmful, then they tend to be positive. And they would probably say to Europeans, well, you may have doubts, but what we're looking for is scientific evidence that there's some damage that could be caused to human beings. And if you can't do that, then why not try? You know, our notion, I think, is as time goes on, the world is going to change dramatically. What we're finding in medicine, some of the new things that we're introducing in medicine, whether it be DNA modification, things like that to fight diabetes 2, to fight cancer, that if this is good for society, if we're going to have a healthier population, if we're going to feed more people when it comes to agricultural products, then this is a step forward. Now, however, if there's something that's being done that's proved to be harmful, Americans are going to join with Europeans and say, well, let's not do that.
Es gebe auch, sagt Irv Fry, Amerikaner, die Angst vor gentechnisch veränderten Gemüse haben oder vor hormonbelastetem Fleisch. Wenn es wissenschaftlich aber nicht nachgewiesen ist, dass es gesundheitsschädlich ist, dann sollte man einfach keine Angst davor haben, sagt er. Es gibt keine Beweise dafür, dass es schädigend ist. Und wenn es schädigend sei, dann würden Amerikaner auch sagen, dass man es bleiben lassen sollte. Es gibt ja jetzt einen Vorläufer dieses TTIP, das nordamerikanische Freihandelsabkommen, kurz NAFTA, zwischen Kanada, den USA und Mexiko. Und auch da sehen Europäer, viele Europäer die Gefahr, dass es ähnliche Folgen haben könnte wie damals für Mexiko. Müssen wir davor Angst haben?
Yes, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which dates back 20 years, brought together the three major countries of North America, Canada, the United States, and Mexico. The U.S. already had a free trade agreement with Canada, which went into effect in 1989. And the president of Mexico came forward and said, well, we would like to do it with you too. And so this was a Mexican initiative. And they basically, what the president of Mexico said was, well, we can be at the top of the list of the developing countries, or we can be near the bottom of the list of the developed countries, and that we can move our way up. And so his notion was, let's do it. So we do now have some evidence of 20 years of history in NAFTA. Now, not everything has worked out, and part of the problem was after 9/11, the United States basically said trade, security trumps trade. We thickened the borders with both Canada and Mexico, fearing that there would be another 9/11 incident. We have to learn that, you know, what happened on 9/11 was bad, but we didn't have to thicken the borders like we did with our two closest neighbors. But even that having been said, Mexico now ranks as the 14th largest economy in the world. And from my research, I believe within this short time, Mexico will probably be one of the top 10 economies in the world. It now has access to two of the largest economies in the world, in the United States and Canada. It's creating jobs. We need to create more jobs in Mexico. But it's going to, I think, get to the point where it will be the fastest growing economy among the North American economies. It's going to create more and more jobs as time goes on, particularly if President Peña Nieto is successful in making the changes in energy, in the banking sector, in the electrical sector. And I think that Mexico is going to be one of the great success stories. So you're right. It was very difficult, particularly for farmers in Mexico, that what we call dry farmers, they couldn't compete against American agriculture or Canadian agriculture. But as time goes on, they're becoming more competitive. They're becoming more competitive in manufacturing and in other sectors. And I think that Mexico overall, in spite of some problems, is really one of the great success stories of the past, particularly the past decade.
Das NAFTA habe, so sagt Earl Fry, die drei Staaten näher zusammengebracht. Vor 20 Jahren, da war Mexiko noch ein Entwicklungsland und heute ist Mexiko auf Platz 14 der Weltwirtschaft. Es hat Zugang zu zwei der größten Wirtschaftsmächte, nämlich den USA und Kanada. Natürlich konnten mexikanische Kleinbauern zu Beginn nicht mit den amerikanischen Landwirten konkurrieren, aber sie haben sich in anderen Sektoren weiter aufgebaut. Und wenn man das Ganze von außen betrachtet, dann ist der Aufstieg von Mexiko in der Wirtschaft ein großer Erfolg von NAFTA gewesen. Ein anderer und wichtiger Kritikpunkt, der ist, dass das Abkommen nicht demokratisch legitimiert ist und nicht auf Augenhöhe verhandelt wird, weil zum Beispiel nationale Parlamente darüber nicht mitentscheiden. Ist es also ein undemokratisches Abkommen?
No, I don't think it is. In the case of the United States, it will have to be approved by the United States Congress. You know, the president can propose an agreement if he gets what we call fast track authority. He can basically be in charge, and then at the end of the day, Congress will vote up and down, yes or no, on the entire agreement. And we've gone through that before. NAFTA was an example. And, you know, in the case of Europe, it's going to be a responsibility of the Commission. In this case, the European Parliament is going to have a say in the final agreement. So I think it's true that, you know, some things are being done, you know, among groups, interested groups. But at the end of the day, you know, the representatives of the people are going to have to say yes or no. So, you know, I can see some of the concerns. You know, early on you worry about, well, this interest group's going to get its way and, you know, there should be more dialogue. But at the end of the day, as an agreement is reached, both in Europe and in the United States, it's going to be the representatives of the people that say yes or no.
Mr. Fry meint hier, dass es sich schon um eine demokratische Entscheidung handle, denn zumindest in den USA, da muss der Kongress, also die Repräsentanten des Volkes, darüber abstimmen. Und das sei auch schon bei NAFTA so gewesen. Und in Europa, da müssen letztlich die Repräsentanten des Volkes auch dafür stimmen. Mit dem Politikwissenschaftler Earl Frey haben wir über das geplante Freihandelsabkommen zwischen Europa und den USA gesprochen. Vielen Dank für das Gespräch, Herr Frey. Thank you for being here with us.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much.